This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the 1912 Exiles podcast, the Newport County podcast made by the fans for the fans. Joining me in this pre-season special tonight, I have Ian Street and Ed Bridges.
Good evening.
Hello.
So I want to lead off by just thanking the people who've recently donated to our Ko-Fi. Really appreciate it. We basically run on your goodwill. It buys us a bit of extra airtime. We've been really busy through the summer. Lots of content talking through off-the-pitch matters regarding the trust ownership, discussing shirts, photography and work that County and the community carry out as well, as well as kind of covering off some of the big team news, but we'll probably dive into that in a bit more detail shortly. So reviewing our signings so far, in we've had Ryan Delaney, Shane McLaughlin, Bryn Morris, Nathan Wood, Kyle Jameson, Matty Bonswell and Seb Palmer-Holden. And their notable departures have been Cam Norman, Aaron Lewis, Priestley, and as confirmed yesterday by the club, Mickey. What do we make of how the squad's shaping up so far? Ian, do you want to lead us off?
I've probably said this before, I always struggle a little bit with pre-season previews because this whole issue of, ooh, so-and-so is a good sign-in. Are they? Who knows? Do you know what I mean? We've talked before about there's so many factors, isn't there, in terms of a player to go into another club. However, what Coughlin has done and the backroom staff have done this sort of window is we talked at the end of last season, didn't we, about losing a spine, losing a core. And I really like the sort of profile and the age generally of the players that he's brought in. They're all what I would call solid professionals. They're all of a sort of 24, 25, 26 years old. So they're the right age where they can grow with us for a bit. I think a good chunk of them have been given two-year contracts, which I applaud. You know, I think that's, a good thing. They've all got, 150-odd games at this level or above. So from a sort of solid core perspective, on paper, I think he's recruited very well for the budget that we've got. I think it's quite impressive what he's done. And then it's a question of then augmenting that with some of your League of Wales and some of the younger players and, who knows what they're going to turn out like. But I think that with the resources we've got and with the planning that we've had, I think it looks like he's recruited well in terms of the type of player we want. Hard working, good professionals. I think that's what he's gone for.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We're doing okay in terms of quality for the reasons Ian has said. There's a lot of experience, which was one of the things we talked about at the end of last season of, we were likely to lose your Normans, your Dimitrius. Could we replace the experience? I think we have replaced the experience and that's been really good. So the quality is there. Quantity is a bit down. I don't think we're going to have the numbers that we had last year. And there, some of the fringes of the squad, as Ian said, are youngsters like Kevin Rye, Harrison Bright, and then, some of the players who've perhaps the likes of Bowen, the likes of Wood, who you know, have played at, done well at a lower level, but perhaps, you know, will take a little while to adapt and stuff. So the quality is all right. The quantity, I think, we can't afford to have too many long term injuries and suspensions and all of that going into the season. And I think we will still garnish what we've got with a couple of loans. And we'll doubtless come on later on to talk about whereabouts on the pitch those need to be. But I think with the budget we've got and with the players who we've lost, we probably had about as good a window as we could have hoped at by this point.
Yeah, I think we normally end up with about four loans, don't we, by the start of the season, most of the time around. So I think we might supplement what we've got with another one or two. Bonswell and Palmer Holden are our two loanees at the moment. Yeah, I think you're right that some of those people who've been on the fringes, the likes of Bowen and Waite, who maybe didn't get too many opportunities last season, may see a bit more game time. Caban Rai has been playing quite a bit in pre-season, so I think the manager obviously, at the very least, taking a very good look at him. Whether he gets a lot of first-team action or not remains to be seen.
I think that he has got something from what I've seen of him. I like the look of him. I wouldn't want to go into the season with him being the, you know, the second choice striker alongside Bogle. We'll come on to who we think we need, but I think we could do, you know, if it's Caban Rai and Holden Caulfield, as he'll always be now in my book, but with Seb Holden Caulfield, whatever his name is, when it comes on, I think there are two to come on, you know, from the bench and support and join. But I'd like, you know, obviously we've got Zanzala injured. I don't think Caban Rai yet is Bogle's first choice partner. I hope not, anyway. I think we can bring someone else in there.
I think he was, wouldn't it, if he wasn't injured. But given his track record, we probably need a plan for Oz being injured for the majority of the season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the likely starter at the moment is, well, what, the man who you're calling Holden Caulfield and I'm calling Tara Palmer Tomkinson, but we're gonna be having all sorts of fun with his name over the course of the season. But I think he looks like a good match actually for Bogle. I mean, I his signing, I was sort of in two minds. You know, when you get those players who are having their first proper loan spell in men's football in, you know, the league club, it will take them a while to adapt. I think we'll see that with Bonswell too. But physically, he's a big old unit, very broad shoulders. And I gather from seeing what Bristol City experts have been saying that he sounds like quite a similar player to Bogle. You know, he's big, he's strong, but actually he's quite comfortable with the ball at his feet as well. And so he can play as a 9 or a 10. So I think at the moment, he's probably like first cab off the rank up front with Bogle, and then you've got Rai on the bench. But I would hope that striker is where we're targeting bringing in another body, because I think we look seriously light up there, especially if you've got Zanzala out for a couple of months.
Should we work our way through the side? We can work from front to back. It's fine. Right. So if we're starting up top with Bogle and Oz would be our choice, but obviously if Oz is injured, we're going to go with Bogle and Seb. Who are we placing in our midfield? I think Bryn Morris is going to slot in there straight away. So you probably see Morris, Wildig. I think we're going to stick with a five at the back. I don't know who that extra man is going to be. The third man. I'd like to see James Waite have a go. I quite liked him in central midfield. I know people would disagree with me, but if you watch all of Bogle's goals from last season, the ones that he scored in the first couple of months of the season, James Waite is involved in the build-up of loads of them. And I just think he gives us a little bit more of a creative spark than we might necessarily have.
I'm not so sure we will have him there starting. I agree with you that when it comes to creative options, we're not massively blessed. So I think the starting three will be Charsley, because I think, you know, he is a Coco player, and I think he showed last year that he's got the kind of work rate that Coughlin looks for. I think it'll be Wildig, because I think he's got the experience and he probably does offer the creativity that we need. And up until today, I was thinking that it would probably be Scott Bennett as the final one of the three. But I don't know, looking at some of the highlights or lowlights from that Bristol City hammering, whether he's got the pace, I don't know. So it could be Morris ahead of Bennett, but one of those two. So Charsley, Wildig, and then either Bennett or Morris for me.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you touched on pace there, because one of the things we didn't talk about in terms of the profile of the players that he's brought in, I think he's also been looking to bring some more pace into the team. with the players that he's brought and the ability to press and harry, I think, is also quite a key thing that he's brought in, whether that's Seb up front or the mid or anyone else he's brought in. I think that's definitely a profile of the players. The front, the middle three, if we're going with a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2, Charles Lee Morris, Wildig for me. I think Bennett doesn't necessarily have the pace. I think that Morris, in the glimmer of the Sheffield gloom the other day when I was down there watching him, he looks a good, you know, he looked a good acquisition. I don't take too much of enough preseason, but he looked good on the ball. He looked constructive. He could pass it well, didn't shirk a tackle, and it certainly has more pace than Matty Dolan, who he's a little bit like. Yeah. So yeah, Charles Lee Wildig Morris for me.
At the back, there's relatively few options at left back. Just Matty Bonswell is our only left back on the books at the moment, or Will Evans in a pinch. Ian, do you want to start us off with your back five?
I suspect that he will play Will Evans as the left wing back. I wouldn't. I would start with Matty Bonswell, partly because I think, you know, we all know that the youngsters take a bit of time to set up, but let's have a look at him early doors. Let's get in there. He's got a lot of pace. And a couple of Newcastle fans I know rate him pretty highly. I'd get him. Let's have him in there. And then obviously on the other side, I think we're going to play McLaughlin as a right wing back. And then I think we'll play Jameson, Clark and Delaney as the three. And Delaney and Jameson, we got some big units there. There's a bit of heft at the back there. And obviously I've not seen Delaney, but Jameson looked decent at Sheffield as well. He looked a big unit, looks quite comfortable on the ball, looked to have a decent amount of pace about him. So
I think you're right. Physically, there aren't going to be that many teams bigger than us next season, which is no bad thing. So yeah, I'm with you in terms of the three centre backs. Delaney and Jameson, I think, are both left footed, and then Clark on the sort of right of those three. McLaughlin is the shoe in at right wing back. I would be starting with Evans at left wing back. I think Bonswell will come into the season a bit like Scouse Lewis did last year. I think it'll take him a little while to get up to speed. I suspect by the end of the season, if all goes to plan, he may well have taken ownership of that shirt. But I think we'll start with Evans just to give him time to get up to speed.
Yeah, I think Drysdale's not quite ready to be coming back from injury yet, is he?
November, they said.
November. So really, we don't have too many options out of that. Those three centre halves, that's kind of what we got.
And it'd be interesting because I think when he does come back, I mean, I know that, you know, he's had some great games and not some great games, but I think the potential of a Drysdale, Delaney, Jameson back three is good.
Still only 23, isn't he, Drysdale?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's still got time to develop. And yeah, also, I think if you're right in saying Delaney and Jameson are both left-footed, I'd quite like Drysdale on the right of that trio because he's got a bit more pace than Clark. As the wide centre back in a back three, you can end up defending up against wingers out wide, and that's where Clark can possibly get exposed. He's very clever in the way that he uses his body to try and make up for his kind of shortcomings, but you know, genuine, there's no substitute for pace, is there? So moving on to goalkeepers, I think this might be unanimous, to be
honest.
We're
going to have our age-old debate about who do you pick out of Dale Townsend. Well, it's nice, we do this about three times a season, don't we?
Yeah, but I think every time almost all of us decide on Townsend.
Yeah.
The debate rages on.
Again, I don't think we should dwell too much on the drubbing at Bristol City today, but yeah, Day didn't cover himself in glory with a couple of those. So yeah, it's Townsend for me.
Same.
On the flip side as well, we took a drubbing from Swansea, didn't we, in the week in another behind closed doors friendly. And Townsend apparently produced some fantastic saves to keep it at five. Again, I agree with you both that I think he would be my choice to start in goal on the first day. There were even some rumours that we might be looking to move Day on if we can find someone to take him on, because he's probably one of our highest paid players.
Yeah, I believe that. You know, there's a lot of rumours that I take with a pinch of salt, but I should imagine if someone offered to take him off the wage bill, and we that would probably free up enough money to bring in a couple of relatively cheap options elsewhere on the pitch. I think we take it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But who's your captain?
I think James Clark will be selected as captain.
Well, that's the speculation. I'm with Ian. I think if you're looking at the back line, Clark's probably the one who's in the weakest position. And if Drysdale comes back strongly from injury, then Clark perhaps is the one who makes way. So I think it's going to be Carl Jameson personally.
Yeah, it's interesting because it touches on our, you know, where's our leaders that we talked about in the last season. But I just jotted down a few names that I think, you know, could be in the running for it. Jameson being one, Scott Bennett being one, Morris, Wildig, and even Bogle up front. You know, if you want to do something a bit different. I actually didn't have Clark on my list of options. I've not seen Delaney or anything, but he talks about him being a bit of a warrior, hasn't he? So I think it'll be Jameson as well. I agree with you. But I think I would give it to Morris.
Is that based on what you saw at Sheffield, or is that just a punt?
Yeah, so Jameson had the armband at Sheffield, but I like the way, it's a correct, ridiculous, he's more so, I like the way that Morris communicated and his positional play. I thought he looked like someone who could lead. But as I said, I think we actually have a few in the squad who you could argue could make a captain. But I would give it to Morris, but I think he'll give it to Jameson.
The thing with selecting a captain as well is so much of it is down to the things that we as fans don't see. It's how you are in the changing room, on the training pitch, even off the training pitch with the other players. And we're not going to see that. So we are kind of finger in the wind a little bit. My only thing is that Jameson's still relatively young. He isn't that experienced. I just think Clark's age and experience certainly puts him in a good position to be a leader in that group. Whether he's getting the playing time that maybe you'd want your captain to have, I definitely don't think it's going to be Bogle. He wears his heart on his sleeve too much, and he lets things get to him a bit more than you'd want your captain to on the pitch, I think. So when Coughlin first came in, his mission statement was crawl, walk, run. Do you think I think towards the end of last season, we were getting towards walking. Do you think we've kind of stumbled and fallen back into a crawl, or are we ready to move forward a bit at a bit more of a canter now?
It was a good analogy. And I think if you look at the way we played under him for the first couple of months of just grinding out results, making ourselves really hard to beat, that was the crawl phase. And I think by the end of the season, we'd moved into the walk phase and we were starting, you could start to see what Cockball was going to look like a little bit more. And I think now that he's added his own type of players, and like half of our signings are Irish, aren't they? You know, I'm hoping this will be accompanied by like Cut Price Guinness in the stands, you know, so that he's making a team in his own image, Coughlin. I don't think we're anywhere close to running yet, but I think we can perhaps walk at a slightly brisker pace.
I think we'll still be walking pretty slowly. it's a good analogy, isn't it? I think we are still very much just crumbling off the floor at the minute, crawling up to get into that walk position. So I think, yeah, we're walking at the minute probably a bit shamblously slowly, like I do when I stumble about seas. So yeah. Quite a slow walk, I think we're at the minute. But, you know, that's not to knock what he's doing and where we are. Do you know what I mean? I just think that's the reality of what it takes to change a squad, to develop it, to put it, as you say, to get that squad in its own image, to, you know, start bringing in the players, reducing the age, you know, getting more pace in there. There's a lot of work being done, isn't there, to try and change the squad. So, yeah, we're walking, I think.
That's kind of the case at the start of every season, though, isn't it? League Two has such a high turnover of players. Yeah. You think every season we sit here discussing how are we going to replace X? You know, your Josh Sheehan's or whoever has left that year, because players are only ever on 2-year contracts. So I think, you know, the start of the season is always a little bit of still trying to figure things out. I noticed today that the only two Flynn players we have left was Joe Day on his return, and Townsend, both signed by Flynn, and Scott Bennett was signed by Feeney. So all of our players now are either Robrey signings or Coughlin signings.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it, when you think about it? Yeah. But I think it also shows that, you know, that Flynn era team, you know, was coming to the end, wasn't it? You know, you've got your Ammon's non-league, you know, Labadie's gone into non-league, hasn't he? You know, that it was reaching the end of its cycle and we needed to regenerate, didn't we? Like the doctor. And we have done that you know, a little bit under Obrey, but now not fully under Coughlin. But that's the direction of, you know, that age thing that I think is really important that we've changed.
Yeah, exactly. And you've already said it, Ian, but if you look at the players who've come in, a lot of them are at a really good age. You know, you can imagine the likes of Jameson, if things go to plan, actually being here for a good amount of time. You know, he could end up being the next, like, Mickey Dimitriou and being around for 8-9 years because he's at that age where he's going to develop as a player, hopefully, you know, under a manager who understands how to get the best out of him, you know, Coughlin, former centre-back and all that. And you see it with other players that he's brought in as well, Morris and, you know, Charsley and so on. And actually, it comes back to something I said at the end of last season. We knew we were going to lose a lot of experienced defenders, but having said that, we didn't have a great defensive record last season. So this summer has been a chance to rebuild and reshape that defence from scratch. And we look to be doing that with a really good core of young, promising defenders. So I think, yeah, bring it on. It may take them a few months to gel properly. And we'll come on a little bit later, perhaps talk about how important the start of the season is if you look at what the fixtures calendar has given us. But yeah, we've got to hit the ground running, and hopefully they can get that gelling done nice and quickly.
Yeah, we need, for players to stay there for, you know, 7-8 years, we need them to be in that perfect window where they're good enough for us, but not too good to go anywhere else. That's a very, very narrow Goldilocks zone. My personal opinion is that I think we've done quite well at bringing some of the younger players through. But do you think we should be concerned that we're not really getting youngsters from the academy through to senior level as much? We had Lewis Collins, who kind of played in fits and starts, and he's now dropped down to Torquay. We had Harrison Bright, who we were told was part of the first team last season before he went out on loan. We had Twamley, who went out on loan and then was released. And now we've got a new crop of youngsters with Rye and Bright is still there, Tom Stokes. Do you think maybe there's a lack of investment in the academy, or do you think that it's an actual issue that we're not getting those players through into the first team?
Well, I think Coughlin is going to make a concerted effort to really develop the likes of Rye and Bright. And I think that's partly because he has to, because he doesn't have the budget to bring in players from outside, so he does need to make the most of what we've got. But having said that, he was giving Rye chances at the end of last season to prove himself. He clearly sent him away over the summer to go and work on his fitness, bulk himself up, and he's been getting his chances pre-season. I should imagine we're going to see Bright in a good few games, probably early on in the season, in the Spotify Trophy and everything else. So I think that actually the future is probably brighter in terms of the academy than it has been for a while, and that's partly from necessity, but I also think Coughlin seems to be engaging with the academy in a way that perhaps we haven't had over the last few years. I mean, I've said it before, I would much rather we were giving some chances to some of our own youngsters than developing other teams' players for them, especially the ones who come in, you know, January sort of time. And by the time they've kind of got up to the level, they're off back again. We saw it at the end of last season with McNeil, for example, who by the end of the season started to look all right. But it's not going to be us who benefits from that. It's wherever he ends up next. So I think we're probably in a better place now than we have been for a while with the academy. And I think Rye is potentially going to be a really exciting player for us this season.
I feel a bit sceptical about the academy. It may be because I don't know how it works and all the rest of it, but I get a sense that Coughlin's looked at it and feels like he's had a look at the academy and let quite a few go. Said, you're not going to make it. You're not up to the standard. Which leads you to think, well, what were they doing there in the first place to a certain extent? And I think when you think about our finances, you know, one of the key things we need to do is develop and sell players. Whether that be, you know, Jameson, who's coming at 24, and we say, right, he's the one who's got the best resale value. Let's get him under a decent contract, sell him when we need to, right? Or whether that's, you know, if we're saying Kibban Rye is going to be the one that's going to make it, you know, do you try and get him tied down so we can actually make some money out of some of these players? Because, you know, it's been a long time, hasn't it, since anyone's come through the academy into the first team that we've sold, as far as I can remember. It doesn't feel that good to me that very occasionally we have the odd player who might come and play a handful of first team games. You know, who was the last one who came through and actually held down a first team place?
Regan Poole.
Had anyone? Regan Poole, yeah. Played about a season, did he? Did you get a season out of him?
Yeah. Half a season? He came in and played most of a season, and then he was picked up by Man United, wasn't he?
You know, that's a good few seasons ago, isn't it? You know, yeah. We're not... So if we judge it by things like that, and I'm not saying we should judge it by things like that, but partly for me is that the state of the club we are and the type of club we are, a fundamental part of what we should be, of our DNA, should be trying to get that academy right and getting players that do come through. I don't see it. So I'm like, well, that's... So for me, I'd question it.
Yeah, some clubs have got rid of their academies, haven't they? I know Salford have gone to a B-team model. I think there was another one in League Two, but then... If you look at the likes of Exeter, who sold Ethan Ampadu for, I think it was about £4 or £5 million to Chelsea, and then they got a chunk of the resale when Chelsea sold him on to Leeds this week.
Yeah.
You know, that's a dream for a club like us. If we can have £6 million over the course of 5 years, I think our playing budget is kind of back of the fag packet math. It's about £1 million a year. So if you can sell one academy player for 5 years worth of playing budget, that's incredible.
Yeah.
But then how many frogs do you need to kiss to get yeah. one good academy player?
Yeah. I don't mind us bringing the loan players in at the start of the season, like we've done with Seb and we've done with Matty Bonswell. I think it's really good that we got Matty Bonswell as early as we did, because what normally happens is you get your loan players last, don't you, after they've sort of every all the... So getting him in dead early, I think that's been a really good shout. I'm less impressed by having, as you say, 18-year-olds coming in January. I don't think that does us anything particularly, unless it's, you know, we're firefighting and we need a body. But
yeah,
get him in. If we got him in early, we can have him for the season. Great. January, I'm not sure. It does us a huge amount of favours.
Anyway, moving on from the academy. Last one on signings. If you could sign one more player in a position, what position would it be? We'll start with you, Ian.
Oh, I need two signings, really. But... It, for me, at the moment, it's got to be up front. I'd be looking to bring someone in alongside the Bogle. If I could have two, and I can't, but if I could have two, you're right, Ed, in terms of the fact that we've got some size at the back, and Morris is okay size wise. But I do think we across the middle of the park are maybe a little bit light from a physicality point of view. And I know we've talked many times about having a sort of a Labadie type player who could stay on the pitch, but I still think that we might miss someone like that, could do with something like that. But if I've got one, it would be a striker alongside the Bogle.
I'm okay in terms of physicality in midfield. You know, you've got Bennett there. All right, the likes of Charlesley and Wildig are not the biggest, but they're no shrinking violets either. And if they've got to put in a challenge or leave something in on a challenge, then they will do. So I'm not worried about that. For me, it's a striker as well. I think it's great that we've got Wright. I think it's great that we've got Tara Palmer-Tomkinson. But we need, I think, another experienced striker up front with Bogle. And if I'm being picky, I want some pace as well up front, really. So I would like the striker we bring in to have some serious roadrunner legs on him, because I think that's the thing we're missing. I can see us being quite hard to score goals against. Obviously, the last couple of behind closed doors friendlies perhaps don't back that up. But I think once we get going in fourth division football, I think, you know, particularly under Coughlin, we're not going to concede loads this season. I'm struggling to see where the goals come from, especially if Bogle has a dry spell, but also just in terms of like creating chances as well. So I think a really nippy striker is what I'd be prioritising, just to try and stretch some defences a little bit.
I agree with the striker, but just to kind of put something different on the argument, wing backs, we've got Bright and McLaughlin. So I don't know whether you want more depth on that side. We've only got Bonswell or Will Evans, who isn't really a left back, on the other side. And with Drysdale injured until November time, we've only got three centre-halves.
But you've got Bennett and you've got Morris, both of whom can be an auxiliary centre-half if required. Like, you're right. I completely understand the point you're making. But we said it a few pods back. If you look at the versatility of what Coco has signed, you know, I think the fact that you've got Delaney and Jameson, they're left-footed centre-backs, but in an emergency, they could go to left-back. You've got Bennett and Morris in midfield, but they could drop back and cover a centre-half slot for a game or two if needs be. Like, there's enough flexibility and versatility there that I sort of feel like we probably got some cover.
Will Evans can cover as a forward. He didn't have the best time in front of goal last season, Will Evans, but he is a forward. If he's there as depth, yeah. If he's not your, if Oz and Bogle are your first choice strikers, then your depth is Seb, Will Evans, and Rye. You've got five strikers to fit into two positions.
I think we've said this on the WhatsApp group and elsewhere. Like, yeah, Evans's goal ratio in the games he played up front last year was nothing to write home about. But if there are games next season where we're away from home defending a 1-0 lead and you just need someone to hold the ball up, I'd have no problem at all sticking Will Evans up top. I think his work rate was good. And, you know, how many times last season did we say it? He just needed one to go in off his arse or something. He was trying too hard to get a goal. And I think I think he might get a few more this season, actually, just because I think he's a little bit more settled in terms of his place in the squad and in the pecking order, and perhaps won't be putting the same amount of pressure on himself.
That's the only thing he's missing. I like a lot of the things that he does. He's pretty good on the ball. He holds it up well. He picks out a nice pass. His energy is always great. He's strong. He's pretty quick, but he's just missing goals. And unfortunately, that's what you're judged on as a striker. But he's there as an option, isn't he?
He also can't cross a ball, which is a bit of an issue if you're playing on the left-hand side as a left, whatever he's going to be, a left wing back. So he'll be a bit, I think that's good. It's going to be a really interesting season for him. Can he push on, or is he just someone who can run around a lot? To be honest, a lot of County fans, a lot of people are going to run around a lot, but I'm sceptical about Will Evans.
As the president of the Will Evans fan club, Ian, we're going to have a set two about this, I think, at some point over the course of the season. I know his consistency is a strength and a curse, right? Because he's often a sort of 7 out of 10 type player. You know, he goes out, he does a job, he works hard. He will also have things in a game that will frustrate you. His set pieces, his crossing at times, his lack of finishing perhaps as well. But he's another one. He's young. Last season was his first full season in full-time men's pro football. He played like best part of 40 games. I think we'll see him kick on a bit this season. I'm quite excited. I think I'll have a fiver with you to a charity of your choice. I think you're more likely to have changed your view about Will Evans by the end of the season than I am.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
There we go.
I think his versatility is also a curse, that because he's played in midfield, out wide on the left wing back, up front, he never gets a consistent run in one position to really build up that like relationship with the players around him. And
I don't think versatility is ever a curse. It slightly interferes, I think, with how fans view a player. But I think if you're a manager, especially if you're a manager who's got a squad of like, what are we up to now, like 22 players, a player like Will Evans is gold dust, someone who you can play in three or four positions and who'll probably like drive the bus home afterwards if you need him to. Like, players like that are what you need.
I agree with you on that. Although, obviously, you know, if we had the money, we'd pick specialists in their positions, wouldn't we? But, you know. So the one we haven't talked about was our new Cymru player, isn't it? Wood. I don't know anything about him. So is he giving another one that's just going to run around a lot? And
I'm excited by him. The goal he got last season, where he took it from his own penalty area, beat like four players, ran the entire length of the pitch and finished. Like he's got something.
It's football, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, look, it's a step up for him. There's an undoubted talent there. He's creative. He's quick. He's a lot of the things we've already said we need. I put him in the same bracket as like Tara Palmer Tomkinson, Bondswell. Don't judge them till Christmas. You know, give them 3-4 months and let them get used to the standard, and then we'll see where we are in January. I think he'll be a great player probably by next season, but I think this season it'll be a gradual, you know, coming up to the standard type thing.
Fair enough.
This time last year, we were talking about all the great goals that Will Evans scored before joining us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. We need to give him the opportunity to develop, but he's another option. He seems, again, pretty versatile as well, so always an asset to have, and hopefully he gets his opportunities. So this week we had the away shirt launched. It's white with kind of a camouflage pattern, with the camouflage blotches being in the shape of the County of Gwent. Do we like it? Do we not? I know Ian's criticism already.
To be fair to it, yeah, I quite like it. It's got the, you know, it's a nice mirror to the home shirt in terms of, you know, for a long time, certainly when I started, we played in, you know, white and black away. That was a lot of what we played in. So, you know, we've gone for the sort of 80s, like 80s inspired home kit, haven't we? So to flip and have a kit that we sort of, a different design, but something we did play in back then. So I'm happy with that nod. I like the fact that it's got black and amber trim, both around the badge, around the collar, even though it's not a proper collar, which Ed will come on to, and around the piping on the sleeves. So from that perspective, as a shirt, I'm okay with that. Shorts are the issue, though, aren't they? No black shorts. Should be black shorts.
But I'm sure we'll be able to wear the black shorts from the home kit with the away kit if we need to.
Yes, we'll see.
I quite like it. I think it's a nice enough kit. It needs a proper collar. I really hope that at least one of the... We still got the third shirt to come out. I really hope that has a proper flappy collar on it. But yeah, I thought it was quite nice.
I'm not a massive fan of the camouflage blotches, but that's because wear a lot of camouflage anyway. So for work, so I'd rather not wear it on my days off. Yeah, so I'm not a huge fan of the camouflage pattern. I really like the home shirt. That takes some beating by the third shirt as well. But yeah, it's decent. I think we've had worse ones. That red Hummel one popped up on Twitter a couple of days ago. The one straight out of the catalogue. That was dreadful.
You know, VX3 have done a decent job so far as the first season with us. And also a shout out to, you know how much I hate player reveals and all that sort of stuff, right? Credit where credit's due. The reveal they did for that shirt was witty. It was funny. You know, they did a good job on that. So the sort of whole thing they're doing around the social media stuff they've stepped up. I think the marketing stuff has improved recently. So yeah, fair play for them to that, for that.
With one exception, and we'll get to that in my beefs.
Oh,
it's a teaser.
Moving on to predictions. Where do you think we'll finish? My personal preference is anywhere above the bottom two. I don't think we're going to be kind of near the top end this season. To put a number on it, I'm going to say 17th.
I've also said 17th. So we're coalescing around something already. It's going to be a slog. It really is this season. It is going to be a slog for the reasons that we've already talked about. It's so important we hit the ground running. If you look at our opening five fixtures, there's a lot of games in there that we really do need to get some points from. It gets a lot harder once you get into like October, November sort of time. The opening five or six games will tell us an awful lot. If we can accrue some points early on, we can all breathe a little bit more easily by the time we get into the autumn. If we struggle, if we go and, you know, lose our first four or five games, it's going to be squeaky bum time. But I don't think we could have a better manager at the helm for a season like this than Graham Coughlan. So, yeah, I think 17th is achievable. But, yeah, this is going to be a slog of a season. I just really hope somewhere along the way we manage to have a cup run or something just to give us a bit of light relief, because I think the league games are going to be one long, unremitting, backs against the wall, grind out results. It's going to be one of those seasons, and like that's all right. You've got to have that occasionally, and we've talked at length about the off-field stuff that has put us where we are. But I'd really like it if we could, in amidst all of that, you know, go a few rounds in the League Cup, have a big day out somewhere, you know, be really nice just to have some light relief in it all.
Ian, normally Mr. Positivity.
How many points are we winning the division by, Ian? Go on.
I'm not going to put us down for automatics. I think that might be pushing it a little bit.
I was expecting you to say we'll pit the North Wales franchise on the last day to top
yeah.
spot.
Yeah. Well, we might. Who knows? You know what I mean? We all start with 0 points. That's what I love about it. It's very difficult to disagree with Ed. I think it will be quite a tricky season. But I do think we've signed... I think injuries are going to play. I think if the core stays fit and healthy, that is going to be the key. I think if we get some tricky injuries early doors across the core, then it could be tricky. But if they stay fit, and I'm going to be positive, We've been apparently training like loons off the, which I think is one of the reasons why there's not been too much going on in terms of results wise from a pre-season stuff, because my understanding he has been, Cochrane has been working them incredibly hard. So I think we will be fit. I think we will chase everything going. I think we'll be organised. And, you know, we've got a 20 goal a season striker. If we can get someone up alongside him and we're not going to leak many, then we could, it could be a better season than many of us think. You know, I think Morris, Charles Lee and Wilder could be, you know, there's making of a good access there in the middle of the park. So I'm going to go, let's say everything goes as I want it to, we'll finish 10th.
That's pretty positive, given all the things that have gone on off field.
I know.
just on your point about injuries, at some point we will get a bad injury and everyone will like the bed and start panicking about what that's going to mean for our season. I have a kind of theory, which is that the sort of par for injuries is that you tend to get one bad long-term injury and two sort of medium-term injuries in the course of a season to players in the squad. That's kind of par. You'll have one player who will do an ACL and will be out for 9 months, and you'll have a couple who will get a, you know, a problem means they're out for like three. That's sort of what it feels like about average. As long as those don't all come to our centre backs or to our strikers, as long as they're not in one area of the pitch, I think we can kind of deal with it. So when we do get someone gets a long layoff, let's not all suddenly go into panic mode. You know, that's part of what you plan for. And as we've said, we've got versatility in there. So we just need to kind of keep cool heads when inevitably a player gets injured, because that will happen.
Yeah, agreed. It's something that the manager plans for, like you said, happens every season. It's one of those like next man up sort of things, isn't it? Someone has to step up. If it's one of the starters who goes down with an injury, someone else has, it's an opportunity for someone else to step up. So, top scorer, is there going to be any disagreement on this one? Fairly certain it's going to be Bogle then.
But how many are you going to get? Is it going to be 10 to 15, 15 to 20, 20 to 25, or are we going higher than that? I'm going to say 20 to 25.
Well, that's more optimistic than me. Anything around 15 is perfectly a good return for most league strikers.
Yeah, I'd say 15 to 20. Ed, if he's getting 20 to 25, we're finishing above 17th. Would be my view.
Depends whether anyone else gets any.
While we're on the question of Bogle, I don't know whether Reese is able to answer this as our resident stato. But when I was at Sheffield, I was having an interesting debate with a guy that I've met back in the 80s, who I occasionally bump into at grounds, which is great. And he wasn't wildly happy with Bogle, but he was basically saying that basically most of his goals last year came from pens. And I was thinking, how many pens did he actually, how many pens Bogle actually scored? I thought he got about four, you know, he might have got about five or six.
Yeah, about four. He didn't score most of them from penalties. Didn't he score 21 in all competitions? He definitely didn't take 11 penalties.
Yeah. And also, it's a thing that often gets thrown about of, oh, well, you know, all their goals are from penalties, as though that's a freebie. Like, you've still got to score them. There's plenty of people who can't take penalties well. Yeah. And he was like ice in the veins with his penalties. So that's fine. If he scores 25 goals this season, they're all from the penalty spot. I'm not complaining for a moment. So back in your box.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. If he scores 20 goals a season from the penalty spot, I wouldn't care either. He'd be winning plenty of games if we're scoring that many.
Absolutely.
So who do you think the promotion and relegation candidates are likely to be?
I'm going to go Stockport, Franchise Dons, and as my slightly outside punt, Grimsby. Relegation, it'd be nice to think it might be Crawley and Forest Green.
Crawley are bound to get into some sort of difficulty with their ownership and finances, I expect, this season. There's already been a few rumblings about it. So I think Crawley could go down. I'm not sure who else, really. Going up, I think Wrexham, they've got the budget, they've got the team. They're probably going to be going up. I think Notts County might surprise people as well. You know, they just ride in a wave of positivity. Forest Green have always got money to spend as well. They'll come again. I suppose this is the season to have a bad season. You don't really want to be competing for promotion with those teams with really big budgets. What we want is just some of them to get gone. We can rebuild for a season or two and, you know, maybe push on when there's not so much cash being thrown about by owners and we compete on a bit more of a level playing field.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this year, Division 4 is an incredibly hard division to get out of because of the teams in there with money. Whereas if you look at the third division, actually, because of the teams who've come down with points deductions and off-the-field problems and the relatively modest bank balances of the teams who've gone up, actually, that's a slightly easier division than it has been in recent years. So, yeah, just staying in the game this year is part of what it's all about. So I was just looking because I did some predictions for the Stockport County blog who got in touch a month or so ago. So what I said then, and I stick by most of this, is I think Stockport will go up as champions. Actually, they really impressed me last year. I thought they were unlucky not to go up in the playoffs. So I think they will go up as champions with the Northeast Wales, Hollywood Globetrotters behind them, and Salford as the other two automatics. Playoffs, I think I was tipping the likes of Grimsby, Notts County, Bradford and Swindon to be in there. I said a while ago, I think Flynn will get Swindon to the playoffs this year, but fail at Wembley because that's what Flynn does. And in the relegation zone, I agree with Crawley. The other team who a month back I thought might have ended up there was Forest Green, but I think they probably now will actually be fine. And if you look at some of the, like, they've signed Matty Taylor in the last few weeks, so, you know, they're doing all right. They're going to get goals this season. Morecambe, I think, are the team who are now going to be really in the shit. So, yeah, those are my predictions.
I think you're right, Ed, in that this is the toughest Division 4 since we came back into the league. By a long way. Anything that we do, you know, just staying in it and just trying to do our best in it this year and try and, you know, restructure ourselves a bit, you know, irrespective of where I think we might finish. I think that is the absolute key this year. It's a very, very tough division.
So the final point for the predictions, where are you most looking forward to visiting this season?
That silence says it all, doesn't it?
I'm hoping to go to Forest Green, which would be my first away game in a couple of years. So it's not that far from me. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I think it'll be a good day out.
I think for me, if I can do it, I think Wimbledon will be one I'd like to try and get to if I can. I don't think there's anything else massively jumping out at me, to be honest.
I will be at Wimbledon as well, so I will see you there, Ian. That should be a good day out for all. The game that I will definitely be going to away is Bradford on the last day of the season, because I wanted to tick Valley Parade off for a little while. So I'll be at that. I just really, really hope that we don't need anything from it by that point in the season. I don't want to be going to Valley Parade on the final day needing for us to win by 4 goals and for whatever else to happen in other games. I don't want any of that. I want a nice dead rubber that I can go to and enjoy. So yeah, that. And there's also a home game I'm particularly looking forward to. So my youngest is going to be a mascot for, I think it's against Crewe, one of the games, the home game we've got between Christmas and New Year. So I'm very much looking forward to that one as well.
Oh, that's nice that you got your lad being mascot. Try and get to that one between Christmas and New Year. I normally make one of those Christmas games. The eagle-eared amongst you may have noticed that some of our panel is missing. Jamie is away on his holidays in Italy, but like the professional he is, he has sent in a clip of his close season thoughts. So let's throw it over to Signor Harris.
Buonasera, ciao, croeso, welcome everyone. You find me sitting in a piazza in Firenze, Florence, Italy. I have my espresso, my copy of La Gazzetta dello Sport open in front of me, and being in this magnificent city full of art, culture and history, I'm missing out on joining the rest of the 1912 Exiles gang for the pre-season special. I've spent my days wandering the piazzas and the galleries, musing on the works of Botticelli, Donatello, Leonardo da Vinci, and of course, Michelangelo. I'm feeling rather philosophical about Newport County's current state, and I've drawn some rather tenuous comparisons to the work of the sculptors and artists of the Renaissance period of the 15th and 16th centuries. Let's take Michelangelo's David as an example. You all know what he looks like. He's 17 foot tall. He's symbolizing independence and strength in the perfect image of youthful beauty. But did you know that the marble from which it was chiseled was a rejected block, discarded for its poor quality? A block of marble was provided from a quarry in Carrara, which is an Alpine town in northern Tuscany. But a previous sculptor, Agostino, got only as far as beginning to shape the torso, the legs, the feet, roughing out the drapery and possibly hollowing out a hole between the legs. For unknown reasons, his actually work on the block of marble actually was halted with the death of Donatello, his master, in 1466. Another sculptor, a Florentine, Antonio Rossellino, He was commissioned 10 years later to resume that work, but the contract was just rescinded and the block lay neglected, exposed to the weather in a yard of a cathedral workshop for another 25 years. In 1501, they were determined to find an artist who would take this large piece of marble and turn it into a finished work of art. Though Leonardo da Vinci, among others, was consulted, it was Michelangelo, at just 26 years old, who was given that official contract to undertake that task. Now, Michelangelo was a master of proportion, but when he accepted the commission to sculpt David in 1501, he inherited this block of marble two other sculptors had chiseled, ultimately deemed unworkable. Certain characteristics of the statue of David, his slender, twisted figure, are likely due to the shape of that marble before Michelangelo began working, so what he was given with. David is imperfect and out of proportion. His hands and his face are also larger than they should be due to its original resting place. It was supposed to be observed from afar at the top of the cathedral in Florence. But its weight is absolutely colossal, and other political reasons meant it stood at ground level in the main square instead, before moving to a gallery in 1873, where it still stands today. The fact that Michelangelo could craft something so majestic with this piece was lauded. Vasari, a contemporary of his, described it as certainly a miracle that of Michelangelo to restore to life one who was dead. Now, I'm hoping Graham Coughlin can follow in Michelangelo's footsteps and create something beautiful out of the imperfect. The previous sculptors, like Flynn, James Robry, have had their artistic ideals and tried to imprint them on this side. Now it's the turn of another in Coughlin to work with the marble he has been provided and try to create something great. We can craft a good team out of the players deemed surplus to requirements elsewhere. You know, they might not fit another system, but Coughlin can get his chisel out to carve a solid team, and even perhaps one that's beautiful to watch. I don't know about the quality of the marble we've signed, but I'm hoping with a bit of buffing, a bit of shining, Coughlin can work and build something great. Over the last month, I've been quite despondent about our future, whether we have quality on and off the pitch to stay in the Football League. But I'm taking a leaf out of another book to source some positivity. When it's off-season, I tend to switch off from football completely. I'm a cricket lover, and I wonder if we can take some inspiration from England's Basball approach this summer. It's all about positive thinking and ideas. There's no fear or even talk of failure, but instead, you know, they're seeking out ways to win and go for it, even if it's a risk. Let's try and find clever ways to get a goal, even if it means taking a bit of a risk in terms of losing a game. Conservative football can only get us so far, but eventually sitting back and being compact will eventually let them get through and score. I'd love to see us take more of a chance, have some faith in the likes of Kip and Ray, for instance, but also in the team we're assembling at the moment, much like Basball's unwavering focus on a creative approach to grind out a win. Michelangelo crafted something that is still revered today, 500 years later, out of a piece of marble which was deemed unworkable. Of course, David is the David from David vs. Goliath. It's a representation of a small man ready to slay a giant. Well, we're Newport County. We're used to fighting Goliaths every season, on and off the pitch. Grazie mille a tutti e arrivederci.
So to wrap it up, as we always do.
Are we not going to reflect on Jamie's bit? I mean, that analogy, the Michelangelo's David as Newport County. I mean, he's clearly trying to channel his inner Ian Street. So yeah, well done, Jamie. He's stepping. You know, we talked about players stepping up this season. Jamie is clearly going to be in poetic form for the season ahead. I'm looking forward to. I'm all for that.
It was great. It was great.
And following on by the muse.
Yeah. And that's why I was quite, you know, because we have had a few literary references on here, which is why I like our new Holden Caulfield up front as well. So for those who don't know who he is, go and look him up.
He's the lead character in The Catcher in the Kib and Rye.
Hey,
there we go. We're having fun, listeners.
As always, keeping it very highbrow. We'll finish as usual with the shout-outs and beefs.
Yeah, I mean, can we have shout-outs and beefs before the season started? I don't know what we can, but I'm sure we can think of something. I mean, I would like to give a shout-out. I know that if you haven't listened to it, listeners,
I sat down with Nick, the club photographer, the other week, and that was great. And it was a real good insight to the lot of work that people do who also have full-time jobs, and thinking through and all the sort of processes that she goes through to prep for a game and stuff like that. I found it really illuminating. So a shout out to Nick and others like her who do that work. Beef, the shockingly bad weather for the Sheffield game in mid-July. I was like, as you know, I don't bother with preseason friendlies. So I've got to go to that, haven't I? But it was, the flip side of that is I had an early Bovril. So that doesn't normally kick in till October, November time.
So I have one really minor beef. And as Ed said, the social media has been fantastic for almost all the summer. I've liked some of the signing reveals they've done. They've been all right. But the Mickey Demetriou...
Oh, God, I know what you're going to say here.
They did it in such a way that you can't see the TH or the OU. So in the middle, in big white letters, it just says Anki. And that's all I can see. I can't see anything else. Did no one proofread that and go, that says Anki? It just looked terrible to me. But
I'll make sure we stick a link in the show notes so that listeners can see what you're referring to. But yeah, it was a bit weird.
Anki. Yeah, apart from that, if that's the worst thing I've got to complain about.
Yeah.
Doing all right.
Doing all right, aren't we? So that that kind of brings us to the end there. We've covered a lot of ground. So all that's left is for me to thank the panel.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening. And until next time, keep it county.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.